Phil, do you trust me?
There it is.
With my life.
Oh, awesome.
Good work, good work.
Because I'm going to need some organs.
What kinds of organs?
All right, never mind. I hadn't thought that far ahead.
We got some pipe organs. We got some
mouth organs.
We got some.
Clearly, the one we need, the pipe organ.
Yeah.
Gonna need a couple of them, I guess.
Yeah, those homophones. Always good for a pun.
Oh,
how are you guys?
I'm here.
Here.
It's been a rough week.
Rough week.
And it's been absolutely chaotic. End of semester. Everybody has stuff to do. It's I'm trying to stay sane, and it's mostly working.
That's good.
That is good.
Yeah, end of semester stuff gets crazy. For some reason, it seems like people decide to have the strangest requests at the ends of semesters. I don't quite understand that, but it seems to be how it works. But otherwise, doing fine. I don't know. Not much from last week. I got outdoor water at the house again. Went ahead and added that to the house this last weekend.
Nice.
Otherwise, next project is going to be replacing all the water piping in the house. But that's going to take a lot more work than adding outdoor water.
Yeah.
The hardest part about the outdoor water was drilling the 1-inch hole through solid concrete. That was the hardest part.
Hammer drill.
Yeah, it was, but it was a cruddy Bosch hammer drill from St. Paul's had it. And since my dad works there, we were able to use it. But it was just a cruddy Bosch one, and man, did that have the hardest time getting through there.
You should ask the MLC. I know they've got a DeWalt.
Glenn, oh yeah, I mean, Glenn has a Milwaukee Tools one, too, that I could have borrowed. But I didn't bother. We got through it. That was all that mattered. And but after that, it was pretty smooth sailing. Just I used the plastic PEX, the cross-link polyethylene tubing.
Yep.
And essentially, you crimp both ends onto the ends, and done. That's it. It all works. Pressure's a little low, but that's not going to be fixed until I finally run a full 3/4-inch main feed line for the house instead of going from the 3/4 into the house to a 1/2-inch right away, which makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my weekend. Boring.
Sweet.
How about you, Jonas?
What did I do this weekend? Ladies and gentlemen, important announcement. I beat Space Chem in its entirety.
Yay!
That's right. Space Chem, the Australium bonus levels, and the Core V63 levels. Nobody knows what I'm talking about. That's fine. But I beat it. I beat it all. It's done. Amazing. Fantastic game.
Does it feel like a huge accomplishment? Huge weight off your shoulders now?
It kind of does, to know that it didn't beat me. Well, it did kind of beat me. There were other things I should have been doing that I wasn't. So,
wow.
On the back end.
There's always things we could be doing.
That's true.
Now, I saw somebody post something about Portal 2 downloadable content or something.
Yes.
Is that
yes.
a thing now?
They have a level editor, and
is it
out or is it in beta only?
It's not going to be released, I don't think, until mid-May.
Of this year or next?
Of this year.
That is always the question, right?
This is Valve.
Yeah. That's a good point. No, this is a useless add-on, which Valve is very good about getting out.
Those are very
timely. They're big games. Half-Life 3, Gabe. I don't blame him.
Gabe, if you're listening to this podcast.
you clearly have better things to do with your time.
If for some reason you've taken a slight break from being a billionaire and are listening to this podcast, I want Half-Life 3, but I don't blame you for not having it done. I blame Robin Walker for making too many hats on TF2.
Always passing the buck. Always passing the buck. No, the level editor looks really quite cool.
Yeah.
But so that so you said mid-May it's supposed to finally be released completely?
Yeah, I had, from what I know of it, I haven't been paying attention like I should be, and I should be fact-checking while I'm talking, because I'm sure my Portal 2 game has news feeds under it in Steam. But I thought I had heard that, it wasn't going to do anything until after... People were saying they were happy that it was going to not be until after finals were done. And they announced the release date, I think, for...
That's a good point.
Yeah, they're like, otherwise, Portal 2 would destroy my life.
That's all right. You always have Facebook games.
Not the same thing.
Taku.
Be surprised how into those people get.
Oh, no, I'm not at all surprised.
Well, no, I think level editing is really cool because I like... Everybody should be able to make puzzles. I don't know when they...
Official release on May 8th.
May 8th, yep. There, you're right. Perpetual testing.
That was from 1UP.
Next week. I'm seeing the official Valve release. Press release on it, yeah.
Good.
Nifty.
That's so funny.
And Portal 2 is a sequel, which I think segues
rather nicely into what we were going to discuss.
Sure. Planned topic. Good call for the planned topic, Bob.
Yeah, I looked over the list, and this was the first one that kind of jumped out at me and didn't scare me completely. So basically, it's an open discussion about video game legacies and legacies in kind of a loose term. It's not. But talking about sequels and I guess prequels too at the same time, but follow-ups and whether those sorts of things, do they hurt or harm a franchise? Does the past success or failure of a franchise, how does that affect games in the future? And I guess we could probably give our favorite like video game series and stuff, or examples as well along the way of what works and what doesn't. So that's kind of the whole 9.5 yards of it. I don't know.
Isn't it just the whole 9 yards?
It could be. If you want to round down, if it's integer math.
Wait, are we talking football or warplanes? Never mind.
We'll talk integer math, so it's the whole 9 yards, even if it is 9.5. So what do you think? Well, I mean, best to start from kind of the ground level and work our way up. So, overall, what are your thoughts on do the legacies for certain video games, do they hurt or harm like the future prospects of the franchise? And it's interesting because you bring up Portal 2 as a follow up to Portal 1, but also like the pent up yearning for Half-Life 3 after the follow-ups of Half-Life 2, Episode 1 and Episode 2 as well. So, I don't know, Jonas, if you would like to speak first on that.
Well, first with the Half-Life 3 thing. I mean, Valve did kind of say they were going to do a third one, whether it be an episode, Half-Life 2, Episode 3, or a Half-Life 3. They kind of said they were going to do it. And I'm sure they're working on it. They just kind of got sidetracked. I think 2 is actually a really good number, and I think there's a reason Valve does it so much. I mean, Left 4 Dead 2, Portal 2, Team Fortress 2, Counter-Strike Global Offensive, which is just Counter-Strike 2, pretty much. Half-Life 2. 2 is a good number for Valve because, well, it's a good number for any company, and Valve uses it so much, gets to the second one, and then stops because they do it for the right reason. They use the first one to launch an idea, and then they take the second one to jump off on a completely new tangent and do everything that they learned from the first one and corporealize it in a game. All the great ideas. Hey, Portal was awesome. You know, funny, dark humor, Portal puzzles, 2.5 hours long. Val's like, you know what? We can make the levels bigger. We have this interesting company, Aperture Science. Let's figure out the history with that. What happens, you know, with GLaDOS and whatever else. You know, these are questions we need to know. And similarly, I mean, the only reason I think Half-Life could do a third one is because the jump from Half-Life to Half-Life 2 was a reinvention. Like, Half-Life kind of set a new standard for what first-person shooters are. And then Half-Life 2 set a new standard for what interactive environments are in first-person shooters. What it means to be able to pick a bunch of stuff up and shoot it with a gravity gun. Like, the whole physics, like a physics-intensive game that can be changed around. But, like, as far as a single idea goes, you know, Left 4 Dead, Left 4 Dead 2, new spin on it, added some new weapons, some new special infected, whatever else. And it's just kind of like, let's take the idea, develop it in the primary one, and then expand it and make it better and do everything we couldn't do or didn't know about in the first one. The problem is usually when you get to 3, it's when people start milking for, you know, trying to get cash out of it.
Because you've kind of taken it to its logical conclusion to an extent.
I guess to be fair, though, that does happen with really successful games when they go to their second one. There are plenty of games that did really well on the first one, and then, suddenly, you know, EA or whoever buys up the IP for it, and then the second one is just, hey, let's make money off this and completely gut it and turn it into, you know, a soulless game.
the cash cow, essentially.
Yeah, speaking of soulless, let's not forget the zombie add-ons for every game in existence. Where they're like, hey, you like killing things? Well, kill them again in your favorite game. Now there's zombies. Red Dead Redemption.
Zombies.
Zombies. Because why not?
Because once is never enough. That's what it is.
Yeah, Call of Duty 3, now with zombies.
Yeah, just those the next Black Ops are bringing zombie mode back, it sounds like. Zombies is the thing right now, though.
I know zombies is the thing, and they shouldn't. I mean, yeah, as the greatest generation dies off, we can't really be doing that Hitler thing too much anymore and killing Nazis. And aliens are kind of been done. I mean, obviously that's the engine behind, you know, Halo and kind of Half-Life, and a lot of other games where you're fighting aliens, Crysis, other Crysis games.
The thing about aliens, though, is that there's always the possibility that they're going to be a whole lot more, a whole lot stronger than we are. And they should wipe us out.
Yeah, and aliens are a good one because you can do anything with it. Like, zombies are always zombies, and Nazis are always Nazis.
Yeah, it kind of takes, I think, in that respect, it takes some of the choice out of it, and so then it makes it easier to choose. Because it's like, well, we're going to do zombies. Well, okay, they do these things. That's it. You know?
Yeah.
It's pretty basic.
Yeah, I mean, and there is something, you know, I guess you could say therapeutic about shooting wave after wave of zombies. But I like the fact that Valve realized that and then said, okay, let's make a game like that does that as well as we possibly can. And you like zombies running at you? Well, guess what? Hordes of them come out of nowhere because the AI director decides where they show up. And if you leave your teammates, you're going to get killed. Like, it doesn't matter how good you are individually, you're going to get killed. And they just did a really, you know, good job taking the core concept and building on that. What they knew what people liked about zombie games. It's not like people like zombies. No, people don't like zombies. Nobody really likes zombies. What they like doing is shooting zombies. They like being able to kill something that looks vaguely human and not have to feel bad about it in any level. The thing's already dead, so I can shoot it as much as I want. So if you're going to do that and you follow it to its logical conclusion, it's let's just shoot a ton of things. And then it's like, how do we make it challenging? Well, we don't give the zombies a brain, but we give kind of this horde movement a brain that you can't tell and adds drama and stuff like that. Uh-huh. And why would a cowboy shoot zombies? Like, I don't... Just ride out into the middle of nowhere. There's, like, approximately one person every 100 miles in the Old West. Like, how does a zombie infection happen? People didn't get visited for, like, 8 weeks. They just can't spread.
You have to suspend disbelief, Jonas. You have to suspend disbelief.
I'm done with that. I'm a jaded old man now. Nah, it's fun. It's still fun, I guess.
Jaded old man. There it is. So, yeah. Phil, do you have a rebuttal? I don't even know what I'm talking about.
He just summed that up perfectly, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to look, you know, at the different games and how it worked.
Now, I mean, we've already said that, like, Valve is the company that does no wrong. And, I mean, so as soon as you start talking video game legacies, do they hurt or harm, like, the franchise?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, Valve did a really good job of holding things together. It's like,
yeah, it should have built up to Valve instead of just...
Well,
we can still go the other direction. EA.
No, yeah,
it's interesting. To go back to Valve, though, it's interesting to look at how they've kind of mitigated that. And so far, it's been... Don't release a lot of games within the same series.
Right.
And don't
whereas we counter that, and like the opposite end of the spectrum, we have Nintendo, who releases Zelda, Mario, Metroid, and what other, and Pokemon for every, like, every system.
At least twice.
At least once, if not twice, or three or four or five times.
Yeah.
But... The thing is, though, I really like the fact that the updates, like, that PC games can do now, it's the idea that, like, a game company can, you know, amend their game, they can add to it little improvements they want to do, but they, and again, with Valve, you know, they understand that they're not changing, it's not a new game, so they're not going to charge you for a new game. They're going to, they're just going to give you the upgrades for free. And I really wish, I mean, I don't care about these kinds of games at all, but it'd be so awesome if Valve ran the EA Sports franchises. Because every year they'd just update the roster for free. Because they'd be like, oh, we didn't change anything in the game, so here's new players with their current stats. And that's fine. Instead of, like, every year, well, it's NFL. What amazes me is that they can do NFL or a Madden game every year and still be able to do an NCAA football one every year. And, like, the games are identical, just with different players. And it's, oh, it hurts. It hurts my brain.
Yeah, I wouldn't think about that too much. EA is kind of, man.
Oh, they're horrible.
They're terrible.
Well, Notch, I think, said yesterday or today or something like that, he said indie games are saving, or indie developers are saving the games industry. EA is actively trying to destroy it. I'm just like, oh, Notch said it.
Definitely
it's
feels
official.
That way sometimes.
It's official. Yeah, there's been a lot of hate on EA. I hate them not because they keep making the same, like, games. It's because they just, they buy intellectual property and then show no respect for it.
And then ruin it.
They don't show any respect for it, and then they force the developers to not, like, to do it on their terms. EA's like, no, you got to do it in this budget. And so, I don't know if Mass Effect 3 was BioWare simply building something...
Because it was decreed that it had to do it.
Well, yeah, I mean, did they just build something too big that they couldn't close it? Like, they couldn't shut everything down, like Lost? Or was it EA saying, no, you can't, we're not going to give you the time or the budget to finish this?
You know, and that, I mean, Mass Effect is a good example of, like, the legacy bolstering it to an extent because there was so much lore built into the whole universe, considering they built it from scratch. Like, there was no prior IP before the first Mass Effect game, and they built everything from scratch. And that legacy carried through to that third game, and I'll agree that there were definitely parts of it that felt rushed. And, like, the first probably half to two-thirds of it felt really good, and then the pacing just seemed to get out of whack in the last third. And I think it's another example of a franchise that kind of got pushed out the door too soon almost. And another BioWare one, if you go back to Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2, and 1 was such an awesome game, and 2 was just incomplete, like, period. Like, and it was the same developer didn't do it, but, you know, the legacy of 1 just set the bar so high that you have to hit it out of the park again with the second one, you know. And Valve has been so good at doing that with their second one and pushing it forward. But there is the real chance to get a lot of derision from people if you don't meet your past success. And if other things are, you know, other factors are causing issues with that, like time crunches, budget crunches. I mean, I think BioWare selling out to EA was probably one of the worst things that could have happened for that company as far as their IP goes, you know?
Yeah.
They have such a rich history.
They do. I mean, they were the company that could do no wrong for so long.
Yeah, but, I mean, you get under the EA blanket, and it just seems that it's like a blanket on top of them, essentially, you know?
Yeah, and they're, like, just so many soulless... It's so soulless, because, like, the one game company that I always felt was, like, right from the get-go, fun, cute, yeah, whatever, but definitely soulless, is PopCap. And then I found out PopCap was bought by EA, and I'm like, that does not surprise me in the slightest. Now we can get Plants vs. Zombies 2 with an additional 3 plants added and more zombies, because, hey, for EA, zombies, why not? Actually, I can't really say that, because they don't do it that much.
I think Zynga and EA are destined to be
bedfellows. Goodness. Yeah, they're at a race to the bottom of the something. pick an idiom. I don't know.
Well, we'll take bottom of the well.
Yeah, I mean, it's thing is disgusting. I hate the fact that they attract talent for their completely stupid games. And I know I'm being such a snob right now because I should be fine with everyone's game choices, no matter what they are. Because there's games are games, and it's what you do in your free time, and no one's game opinions are necessarily more important than anyone else's, except for when it comes to me versus a 45-year-old housewife who is playing Farmville. Then I think I get to pull a few cards out.
You hippie gamer, you.
I am. I hate it. I hate being this way. And the thing is, I'm super hypocritical because even though I've played a lot of good games that like historically have had value, there are so many more that I haven't played.
Yeah.
And the game list of the list, I should say, of good historical games, I guess historical parentheses, and good current games, like popular, important current games, is getting so huge. I don't know how anyone other than a full-time like games journalist with who presumably had to start with some kind of amount of money to pay for all this stuff and keep up with it. I don't know how you do it unless you get free copies from you know, game companies and you do this professionally where you can set aside, you know, 40 hours in a week to get through the new Far Cry game and write a review on it. I just don't understand how anybody can keep up with all the historically huge games and still maintain, you know, regular work and regular social life. So, yes, I'm a huge hypocrite with making opinions. Because guess what? I haven't played Final Fantasy VII, and I haven't played Fallout 3.
That's okay.
And go ahead and direct your hate. I haven't played Chrono Trigger. I'm sorry. I didn't finish Earthbound. I quit playing KOTOR after 40 minutes because I was
okay.
Bored.
It's okay.
It really isn't, because I can't, I should, it's okay for me to not do that stuff, but it's not okay for me to not do that stuff and then rip on Farmville.
No, I think Farmville deserves it.
It does, but no, I'm not going down that path. Now, what do you guys think of games like that? That like they don't like repeat editions. I guess I want to say are they bad? Should they look somewhere else for?
Quiet, Phil.
Phil. How dare you not interrupt me? I mean, do you think it's a good idea to look for new ideas, new intellectual property? Or do you think there's nothing new under the sun anyway? So why not just stick to what you do?
That sounds loaded question.
It's an opinion.
Yeah,
you can have it either way.
I think one of the big problems a lot of gaming is old enough now that it's reaching a stage where, I mean, they're trying to do what they know. A lot of companies, you know, Nintendo, some of these other ones, we're starting to get the sequels and Final Fantasy, we have like 27 of them. And it's, I mean, there is something to be said for, you know, they find a game style that works and they continually trying to improve it and build upon it. But at the same time, I really kind of wonder about the history in terms of the lore, because when you're trying to build, like, and my mind keeps going back to Zelda, because I know Bob wrote a post on Legacy within Zelda back several months ago. But yeah. It's like Nintendo really kind of sets Zelda up to be, here's a adventure game, really kind of a puzzle game, but they're all the same story, but, you know, it's a little bit different, and they don't have to be connected. But so much of the gamer community, is like, okay, what's the timeline for this? There has to be a timeline for this. And, you know, even with the Metroid and so many other ones, there's this timeline. And as soon as you start putting all of these together, and, you know, you're trying to make it into this big thing, I think that's when some of the legacy really starts to hurt the game, because the developers are like, well, that was really popular and it doesn't really fit in this game, but we have to have it in here.
Yeah, it's like a Star Trek novel. They're
desperately
trying to look up star dates and be like, no, this couldn't have happened because there was a sun exploding in Romulan space and Geordi was off investigating it as documented in this other book that I wrote. I can't even remember. Oh, no.
So the best ones when they have continuity issues between the books that they wrote. That's the best part. Because they can't keep track of their own.
But I mean, ultimately, though, even with, like, Star Trek, too, it doesn't have to be a continuous, storyline. You could totally have just completely unrelated, contradicting stories and still have a relatively good... I mean, that's what it is. It's storytelling.
Yeah.
And I think we're losing some of the storytelling aspects. And with some of this, the way
that's
we're
a very
doing
good
things.
Point. That's a very good point.
Yeah.
Storytelling has been taking a blow in mainstream games.
I feel kind of the same way with some of the movies, and
oh yeah, it's a
two because we're getting to the point where it's like it has to be. It just gets more convoluted the more you add on to it. It's like, don't give me convoluted. Give me a start over and do something simple.
Yeah, but then if you do something that isn't like, okay, let's say Nintendo's like, you know what, we need a whole new piece of intellectual property. I've got it. We've got this dude, all right? And he is a carpenter. And he needs to go save a different person by fighting something by jumping on it.
Oh, okay.
I mean, then you just get accused of ripping other stuff off. Like,
well, but how about this, though? Let me throw this up for an example. I would have absolutely loved the storyline and plotline for... what's the new Zelda game? Skyward Sword.
Yep.
Even if Zelda would have just been a girl and not a princess or a goddess, if she just would have been the headmaster's daughter and Link would have done the whole entire go out and save her just because she was the headmaster's daughter and they kind of had a little bit of a thing together, I think that would have been an amazing game. But then all of a sudden... She's a goddess, and then she has to go and do this thing. And I felt like the storyline could have been so simple and yet so, at least
you
to
can't,
me, compelling.
But people like the connection, though. Like they like to feel that their time spent on other games is validated, and that's the same reason you can't reboot a lot of series. I mean, they can't, like, reboot the Metroid series and say, okay, forget everything else. But there are people who have played every game and paid attention to whatever story is going on with Samus and everything. You can't start over because that invalidates the time they've spent, and it hurts the fans.
See, to an extent, like, two things. To an extent, I wish they would do that because that would be cool. And number two is that's why I'm a huge fan of what J.J. Abrams did with the new Star Trek movie. It essentially saying, all right, everything that happened after TOS is gone. Like, none of that is valid anymore, you know?
Well,
That was cool because it allows you to go back and have simpler stories and be able to forget a lot of what happened in the past. Not, like, discard everything because you still will have...
Right.
Echoes of that, but like Phil said, to an extent, you don't have to have her be a goddess. That's there. That was part of all the homages that went to pointing ahead to games from the future, and like you were encouraged almost while playing Skyward Sword to look to say, okay, how does this fit within the games you will be playing in the future, because it was a prequel, so... And that messes with your head, too.
No, yeah. I'm not huge into comics, but isn't this what the comic book people have been doing for ages? They just, like, okay, our story has gotten way too complicated. Let's start over Spider-Man, take all right. two.
Sort of. I mean, yeah, the comics are you know... guilty of retconning a lot of stuff. And it's a retcon when they just go back and they change, like, a few things. I mean, although Spider-Man was kind of a big one, because I think they, like, essentially got to a point where they said, yeah, like, the past 10 years of comics were all a dream. like, they retconned it so hard. For those of you who don't know, retcon stands for... I don't even know. Is retroactive something? What is that? Now I need to look it up. Anyway, but the reboot...
Retroactively continue?
Retroactively continue?
That's what Wikipedia or Google says right off the bat.
Retroactive continuity, yeah.
Continuity, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, DC is the one, though, that just rebooted this past year, where they're just like, nope, starting over. New first editions across the board for Batman, Superman. Does anybody care about the others?
No.
We'll just stick with those two.
Now the Flash is kind of interesting. Because really, he's just Superman light. He only has Superman speed, and that's like it.
poor guy. That's how most superheroes are. They're like, well, I have Superman one part of Superman.
Superman's so stupid. He just breaks the system. It's like, oh, Superman could have done it. But yeah, DC's the one who did full retconning and. Or full rebooting, and that did not go over super well with regular fans, I don't think. I mean, they've done it in other... I think there's games where they've done that. Or I guess you can adopt the like, Grand Theft Auto strategy, where it's just, like, a franchise title, but...
Yeah.
Meaning sandbox gameplay where you run over people and shoot things. But, like, none of the stories are connected. It's just whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Just hang out, do escort missions.
You know, to an extent, the Dragon Age games so far, the first two have been that way. The main characters have inhabited the same world, but were in completely different situations. So, you know, it really didn't matter what had happened in the first one. But... That was an interesting ploy. On circumventing that first game to an extent and what had been set up prior. Because I tend to agree with what Phil was saying, how, you know, one of the real dangers, I think, is that it inspires, like, really lazy storytelling to an extent by, or very tight storytelling, and not in tight in the, like, oh, this is a really good tight story, but tight as in, oh, you're really tense, more than anything else.
Right.
By almost forcing things upon people that they feel they have to do in order to appease the fans of the prior games. And,
It becomes very templated.
Yeah, templated, I think, is a good way to look at it. You know?
That's true.
And if you don't have a lot of games, though, you know, in a series, then you can get away from that a little bit. Or if the precedent, like Grand Theft Auto, is that, well, these games are not going to be similar except in their, like, very base five-line premise. You know, drive cars, kill people, essentially. Make money.
Right. And, I mean, that's fine. It's just so terrible with big games now, because they need to keep using the same, they need to slap a known label on it, because people just in the past, you know, 20 years, it's remarkable about how big we as a society have gotten into sequels about everything.
Yep.
Movies, we're scared by almost new ideas. We don't want to figure out something new. We want more of what we know. And that games, which are tremendously expensive when you get to the AAA level, that require, you know, years of planning and development and paying, you know, these developers tons of money to create like this great looking bug-free world. Like, you need to be able to go to your whatever company's producing the game, like putting up the money, and be able to say, this will sell. We have numbers proving that this will sell. Because a lot of games don't do well. Big name games that they put a lot of money into just don't do that great and post losses. And it kind of sucks for those games. But
I got to give them credit. The worlds that they are now creating are so immersive and so, like, part of me is like, well, of course I want them to continue making more of this game,
mm-hmm.
because this is a huge world. This is an incredible world. I want to be here all the time. When I think back to, like, playing Pac-Man, I don't want to live in Pac-Man's world at all. So, I mean, it's just the whole immersiveness that we've, in complexity of the games, I think, has helped kind of stir this continuation. Where, like, for Final Fantasy, it's what we don't want to leave this world, even though it's a different world than pretty much all the time. It's still like the whole
elements are similar, you know.
Yeah.
They have it's still the world of Final Fantasy is its own kind of realm, and you find that with lots of different games too. Like, I mean, Zelda's a good example. Metroid's another great example. You know, I mean,
mm-hmm.
Crisis games.
Crisis, yeah. Well, basically, it just seems like they get to a point where they're like, hey, we want to make this type of game.
Yep.
What name do we have in that branch of play? What do we have mm-hmm. in the name of sprawling fantasy giant world sandbox? Oh, we've got the
Elder Scrolls.
IP. Let's crank something out of there. Or, hey, I want a really intense techno-centric first-person shooter. Oh, we've got the Crysis series that we can go back to. You know.
But, it just feels less, I don't know, less vibrant than maybe it was. Or it feels like, at least for the AAA titles, there just isn't a lot of variety, maybe.
It could be just because you know, the games are so expensive, you can't buy a ton of them.
Yeah.
And so the ones that get advertised a ton are the ones that, like, you recognize. They don't bother sinking a ton of money into this, you know, like the game, I don't know if you've ever heard of the game Alone in the Dark. Like, that was a AAA game that was made years back,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think received that much press, but yet they're, you know, starting to ramp up all the commercials for Mass Effect 3, Skyrim, Prototype 2 right now is the one that's getting big, and soon this summer we are going to have to sit through all the advertisements for Halo 4.
Over and over and over and over.
Oh, I hope those guys do something new with it.
And I will get to listen to my brother talk about it over and over.
You know,
over.
That was one thing I really liked about the Halo Anniversary Edition, was the fact that with the push of a button, you could go back to the original graphics and switch back and forth. Because my cousin and I were playing through it, and, like, all of a sudden we, like, one of us hits a button, and I don't know if we did it on accident or what, but it's like we switch back. And it's like, oh my goodness, this is incredible! And then we switch to the new graphics, and then we just randomly kind of, like, switch back and forth. It's like that
was
really well done.
Yeah, that
is
cool. Good for them.
We'll see.
But Halo is another one where I felt like they told a pretty good story, and then they told a story which got a little bit more convoluted, and then I don't know if I even played through all of 3, but I watched the cutscenes to try to get an idea of what the story was, and oh my goodness, you're playing on both sides. This guy's good, he's bad, or something else. I have no idea what the plot line is after the
first Halo. That was Halo 2, where you got to start playing as the Arbiter. And it was really stupid because they took it out. I liked that part of it. And then they took it out for the third one because they're like, no, people didn't like playing as the Arbiter. They didn't want to have to learn more than one type of gameplay. They didn't enjoy having to cloak and sneak around a bit. So we just got rid of it because apparently the only way our fans know how to play is run into a room and shoot a whole bunch. If you ever watch a Halo fan play Left 4 Dead, it is the funniest thing in the world because they're running and gunning and they're just ahead of everybody else going nuts, and then a smoker gets them and you're just sitting there going, don't leave the group. Like, you can't do everything yourself in this game. You think you're awesome, but you're not. And that's what the game is designed to teach you. You suck and you need people.
Yeah, so many games are like that, though, where there's just, you know, the whole point is to build up your characters. Your character to be this just the pinnacle of humanity, almost, that you can take on all comers.
And that's one of the reasons I really enjoyed Far Cry 2, because you're in a gunfight, and then your gun explodes, or your malaria flares up, and you're like, holy crap, this fight against 5 guys is actually going to be difficult, because my machine gun exploded, and now all I have is, you know, a mortar, which I can't prep, and a crappy pistol that I took off a dead guy, and a machete. And they're shooting me with a truck-mounted machine gun.
But see, if you were a Jedi, you could just deflect the bullets with your machete.
Well, that's... Or if you're Master Chief, you can, jump 6 feet up into the air and shoot them with, the two worst guns in the game if you happen to get them at the same time, which is always become, the best combo in the game ever, the SMG and the plasma pistol.
Or, if you're Mario, you can break blocks with your head. But if you run into a mushroom, you are dead.
That is a platformer, though. They get their own rules.
Talk about mixed metaphor. What is it like? Look at me. I can crush blocks. Ah, turtles. No, can't.
They're
touch them.
They're enchanted turtles.
Lava.
Hey, let's not forget Bowser is a sorcerer in the original series.
It's true.
He's an evil sorcerer. So you don't know what kind of horrible, frightening things that those 8-bit graphics couldn't reveal about.
That's true. They had to choose just the most terrifying aspects of the characters.
Although...
Their cute smiley faces.
The better the graphics become with the Mario games, the sillier everything gets. It's like just playing through the new Super Mario Bros. For Wii. It's just ridiculous. How the storyline is just like, oh, yep, okay.
Yep.
I think Bowser has a right to be mad at Mario. Ever since the Super Mario World for the Super Nintendo.
Occupy the Mushroom Kingdom. We are the 99%.
No,
we're being oppressed by the monarchy.
Mario goes out and he kills Bowser's 8 children. After that point, you can be a little mad,
All gloves are off after that. The gloves are off.
Yeah, well, maybe they didn't die, but he still harassed his kids.
It's true.
Whatever. And then all of a sudden it's like, Mario Kart. Hey, Bowser, you want to end our blood feud for a few days so that we can play golf and...
Tennis and basketball tennis and baseball and soccer?
Oh, Super Mario Strikers. What a great game. What a terribly horrible great game at the same time. Ugh,
It's amazing how often those guys they get together for different stuff.
Speaking of legacy, how do you guys feel about that? Like Sonic and Mario, you know, games they make a bunch of different versions, similar games, similar platformers, and then they just like cart games. And I respect Mario Kart because I feel like it's its own entity now. Like it's its own distinct style of kart racing.
Mm-hmm.
And that it did kind of pioneer in and really develop, and so I'm okay with Mario Kart, but like, how do you guys feel about like Diddy Kong's Racer, which was just Mario Kart with Rareware characters? Like, I'm Diddy Kong driving and Banjo Kazooie.
Even like Smash Bros. I mean, it's kind of like, okay, I understand Nintendo's just they wanted to make kind of a fun kids game, base it on a sport so they don't have to actually come up with a game, and then base it off some characters they already have so they don't actually have to come up with new characters, and they can sell more copies.
Yeah, it's to sell more copies. It gives those characters depth without having to put any
effort.
It is, in some sense, it is kind of fun because, like, with. You get to learn. I mean, it does give the characters depth, and it kind of lets them play with the characters, put them in an arena they wouldn't usually be in. it just doesn't really fit the canon for any of the storylines. Not that any of those storylines are terribly like canonical to begin with.
Yeah, that's true. I want all developers or all game companies to come together and create one ultimate fighting game where it's like Mario. Yeah, you've got like your few Nintendo characters in there, Mario and whatever, but then you've got like
Master Chief,
Nathan Drake. Yeah, Master Chief, Nathan Drake,
John Shepard.
Scorpion, Ryu. You know,
the catch here is we need Valve to do this. Because I think Valve is the only company who could pull that off.
No, EA
All
hates...
hail Valve. All
EA
hail
hates
Valve.
EA hates Valve because they're mad that Valve does everything better than they do. Sitting there eating their sour
grapes. I just I can't see anyone else pulling off a well-balanced and actually fun game with Nintendo characters and
I don't know that
Madden 2012 characters.
That's really not really not Valve's jam. Like everything they do is on the Source engine.
If you're talking about balance, before Blizzard got caught up in the World of Warcraft crap, I would say they have balanced down with StarCraft 2 and Warcraft 3. Those were some good games.
Warcraft 3 was good.
But then StarCraft, they got bogged down in World of Warcraft, and
StarCraft 2 was after.
StarCraft 2 was good, but StarCraft was fantastic.
Yeah, I was going to say, StarCraft 2 was way after
World of Warcraft. I will buy the Zerg, the next one, and the Protoss one, because I'm such a fan of StarCraft. But I want my old Blizzard back.
Too bad. You can't.
I can't, I know.
They're gone. Did Blizzard, did they do, no, that was BioWare, never mind.
Yeah, they're owned by Activision now.
Yeah, and Blizzard owns the rights to Diablo, correct?
Correct, Diablo 3 is out now, or out soonish?
It's out that one's the one that's out May 15th, I think.
There we go, yes.
It's in beta right now.
I've been hearing good things about it. I'm not a huge Diablo
when it works.
Person, but...
when it can function, because when they made it open, like they opened up the beta, it got hammered, and like their servers all broke down, because they weren't expecting as many people to go crazy about it as did. And I haven't played Diablo or Diablo 2. I feel bad. See, there's another one.
Yeah, Diablo 2 is hailed pretty highly.
Yeah, I'm a bad person. I haven't even played through StarCraft.
No, I haven't either.
However, I have played through all the Age of Empires, which I feel...
That does redeem you a little bit.
Balances that out. Oh,
what did you think of Age of Empires from 2 to 3?
From 2 to 3? Wait, now, are you saying from 2 to 3, or are you saying from 2 to Age of Mythology to and Age of Mythology to 3?
Because
it goes 1...
2, and then
yeah,
two,
1,
Age
2.
Age of Mythology, yeah.
Then, Age of Mythology, then Age... And now the new one that's out. That's free on Steam.
Is there a free... Wait, what?
There's a free Age of Empires. It's called Age of Empires Online. It's a completely new franchise. Looks all cartoony.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Civilization for the iPhone.
It's... Yeah, I haven't played it yet. I've got it... I downloaded it and everything.
Of course.
And I suspect that it's one of those games where, like, they let you have... There's probably, like, 5 nations or 8 nations, and they give you, like, 3 to start with, and you can buy the rest.
Yeah.
If that fits your playstyle, but I, Ensemble Studios didn't do it. The people who have done all the other ones did not do this one.
Oh, they just, another studio took the name.
This is, Microsoft owns Age of, Age of Empires, so, what I thought from 2 to 3, Conquerors is, of course, the best. It's so good, which is the expansion pack to the second one. Age of Mythology got a bit too complex. Not complex. It's Age of Empires 2 and the expansion for it, the Conquerors, was it was good because every nation was so similar. And they all differed slightly. They gave them slight advantages in this play style or this play style. With Age of Mythology, they're like, no, they're completely different.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, fundamentally, they behave differently. They not only... they, like, this nation gathers resources better and builds cheaper buildings. And it's like, okay, this is a little bit more than just a play style, how you choose to set up an army and move forward. This is, like, how you have to plan and think with that nation. And the it ended up being that I think aggressive... people, like good, really good online players, always picked the Norse because they were so mobile and fast and they just like launched attacks right away and finished off the game. And then they expanded Age of Mythology and they brought out the Atlanteans as a new nation, and in an effort to like be able to compete with the Norse rush but keep a different play style, they accidentally broke the game and made the Atlanteans like a super nation. It's just unstoppable. Better in every single way. And then they're like, you know what, this sucks. And so they flushed it and moved on to Age of Empires 3, which I think got a lot of the good stuff back. But then they put those giant monitor ships in there that can shell from, like, halfway across the map. It's like, that's not... Controlling the sea should, like, help you... win, like, it should be 50% of the battle. It shouldn't be 100% of the battle, which is what happened in that game with that unit. But overall, Age of Empires 3 was a lot of fun, except for the campaign, where they should have just hired an actually Scottish, a dude who was actually Scottish to read the lines. But they didn't, and you can tell it's just disgusting, insulting... line reading. I mean, how hard would it have been, like, hey, Gerard Butler, or whoever, come in here and read lines. He would have done it.
Probably.
But no, no, it clearly sounds like they have some dude who woke up late, it's a Tuesday afternoon, and he came in and he read lines for Morgan Black, and just, ugh. Like, it's just stereotypical Scottish crap from somebody who, like, has heard somebody else do an impression of Scottish people, and then he's like, yeah, I can do it now.
See, but if you're not British, you can't do other, you know.
You're right. The key to doing any, like, UK accent is to already be British and be able to like add a little bit more to make yourself sound like you're
from
Yorkshire,
and then you can
yeah.
automatically do
or
really good American accents.
Yeah. No, that's not true. If you watch like QI or something like that, where they regularly do, you know, they kind of poke fun at Americans and do an American accent, if you're listening, you can tell that they're faking it. Like, it doesn't sound quite right, and they pause too long on some words.
Oh.
And
see, I was thinking like Hugh Laurie.
Hugh Laurie, no, I mean there are plenty of British people who can pull off perfect American accents.
Yeah.
But there are American actors who can do pretty solid British ones too. It's not as easy to find, but I think like Robert Downey Jr. does a very good British accent in Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, Robert Downey Jr.
And yeah, I mean there are people who can do it, but then there are the horror stories of American actors like friggin' what's that? Kevin Costner. That's the
dude.
Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Like, just... ugh. Not even close. Like, who let him... who said action? Like, I feel bad for the guy who snapped the whatever that thing is to sync up the time and sound. And he was like, we're doing this? Did you guys hear what I heard? We're doing... okay. And they went forward. And they're like, Morgan Freeman will make up for it.
It's true. Morgan Freeman can make up for a lot.
So, if you're making a video game, just get a voice actor. You can find somebody.
Voice123.com.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. If you want a nice British accent, call up, you know, Stephen Merchant and have him read the voice of Wheatley. From Portal 2. Amazing. Just amazing.
Voice acting can have a huge impact. If you're going to do it, you better do it well.
Yeah. Which I have to give props to the game Aquaria, which is an indie game. They actually... it's one of the few indie games to have voice in it. And
oh, really?
they got a good... very... I mean, I'm no judge, I guess, no professional judge, but I thought the lady who'd read the lines for Nyjah did a very good job doing it, especially for an indie game where I'm sure she was paid in, like, Danishes when she came in the morning. They're like, have two of those and just read lines for us, sweetie. Okay.
Could you just...
and
we'll have more Danishes, really.
Like, and just, I thought it was a really good job and compelling reading. Whatnot.
Now, speaking voice acting and soundtracks a little bit, do you guys see the post from computervideogames.com? So it came up in my Twitter feed earlier this week.
The
top 100 video game songs,
yes,
of all time, or it's actually the best 100 best themes of all time.
Did Mario win?
No,
thank God.
It was in no particular order.
Oh,
so I mean, it wasn't.
He probably did.
His was in there. There were a lot of ones that I'd never heard of, and some that I kind of miss, or think that probably should have been in there. Some
yep.
that maybe weren't. The best. I kind of wanted to do my own list. I don't know. I probably won't get around to it. But it was. It's definitely like it took me 3 days of working to actually make it through the entire list and listen to all of them.
Oh,
but
Keith Haring's birthday. Sorry.
I do kind of want to go through. There were a couple games that mentioned and a couple soundtracks I don't have, and I'm like, hey, that's a game
that's
I
impressive.
Should listen to.
What's the name of this site? I don't know.
I'll put a link in the show notes. Computerandvideogames.com.
Yeah, I did see that, Phil. And I thought, you know, there are a lot of them that I agree with, but anytime you're going to be picking the, you know...
top 100.
Of anything...
I mean, the way most of these things are picked are, like, people sitting around a break table going, what are your favorite songs?
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of themes to try and keep track of, too.
Yeah.
So, but I agree with a good number of them. And,
Definitely. Like, the Metal Gear Solid and some of the Final Fantasy Elder Scrolls. And granted, there's some remixes and reorchestrations that sound a lot better than the originals that they threw to get in
yep.
the post. But
If you can find, if you can, that's the man with the machine gun. That's from Final Fantasy VIII. That's one of my favorite themes right now. It's just really, it's just a good composition overall, and there's an orchestrated version actually. That if you are on Spotify, you can find it. You can just type it in, and it'll show up. And that was there too, and that was really cool.
Wait, what?
Man with the machine gun, I think. I can find out. Hold on.
Well, I'm looking right now. I'm looking at the greatest video game music, that compilation album done by the London Philharmonic, and I just noticed that almost all of these are, in fact, except with the exception of Tetris, these are all sequel games, which is what we're talking about. Well, I shouldn't say. There's a Legend of Zelda Suite, which is the professional, not everyone applauding every 5 seconds version of what they did at Video Games Live.
Oh, they got Angry Birds in there too, though.
Yeah.
They have Angry Birds in there?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Track I deleted four. That. I deleted it because I never wanted to hear that crap again.
The man with the machine gun. That's the name of the track by Nobuo Uematsu. He's done most of the music for the Final Fantasy games over the years.
Which, I love the Final Fantasy soundtracks, but they're always so sad.
Yeah, well, most of the games are kind of sad.
I need to find some more game music that's uplifting.
Yeah. Do that one, that greatest video game music. That's on Spotify as well. Just greatest video game music. It's got some great ones. Sons of Liberty theme from Metal Gear Solid 4. It's so good because it was composed by what's his name? That Gregor Wilson dude. Whoever did the soundtrack from like the Chronicles of Narnia. What is that guy's name?
Those are a lot of good ones in there.
He's a professional conductor. Composer.
Mass Effect Suicide Mission, that's a really good
Harry
one too.
Harry Gregson Williams. There we go. Thank you.
Yeah, I got the first soundtrack from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. That's a good one.
Yeah, I think he did the Metal Gear Solid stuff.
Yes, no so Final I'm Fantasy cool. VII. I am done with that game.
Oh, you're right. Well, there's Final Eight. Fantasy main theme, though.
Yep.
It's got the Halo 3 soundtrack. Well, I think the Halo 3 soundtrack's really good. As much as I'd like to rip on Halo, which isn't actually that much because I enjoy playing it, its soundtrack is actually very good.
Indeed.
I'm so happy Sonic the Hedgehog Green Hill Zone is on the top 100 because I love that. That's such a good piece of music.
Which, when I heard that, it's in my iTunes playlist, and when I heard that, I'm like, wait, this is Sonic? It sounds like Mario meets something else. Like, it's one of those ones that I always hear, but I never associate with the correct game.
Yeah. Oh, Mute City. Jolly Roger Bay. I gotta stop reading these.
I really wish there was, like, a link here so you could download them all, or get them in a playlist somewhere. I'm irritated that they're all YouTube links.
Sadly, I don't see on here the entire soundtrack from Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2.
I heard a rumor that the next Tony Hawk Pro Skater is going to include tracks from the first two games.
That's going to be pretty sweet. It's got Tony Hawk's kid in it. So old. I seriously
those games were so good, though.
Oh, they were. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 for the Dreamcast. Best sports game ever. That's right, Dreamcast. Seriously underrated system.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to be hipster about that. It had
128
graphics, like 2 years before the GameCube. Or the PS2 did. Ridiculous. And it got totally slighted. Crazy Taxi? Crazy Taxi was so good. Oh, I love it.
There you go. Well, should we close it up?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think we said enough.
Final recommendations.
Are you guys playing any games right now? I mean, Jonas said you just finished Space Chem.
Yeah, and I just bought another one today.
What is that?
I didn't want to miss this. Or I bought it last night. I didn't want to miss the sale on it, so I bought Dust Force. Well, it was 50% off. Also, what was recently, Dust Force is a platformer, indie platformer. Also on sale for the Midweek Madness on Steam this week was Bastion.
Ah.
Oh.
It was on sale on the Mac App Store as well recently.
Hmm. Good.
Yeah, there's a number of games, including Bioshock, Bastion, and a couple other ones. I think Aquaria.
Yep.
And Aquaria, they're all coming out on the Mac App Store, and I'm like, I already have copies of some of these on Steam. And now there's
and
a lot
native,
of the,
I don't feel like a lot of those games would be good with the touch.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, the Mac App Store, not the iOS App Store.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. Mac.
I'm sorry. You're right. That is what you said. Aquaria just came out for the iOS as well.
Oh, did it?
And so I was thinking of that, and I'm like, that's stupid. That's never gonna work. Yeah.
One thing I'm watching right now is at BaldursGate.com, they are going to be releasing the Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition specifically for the iPad. And so I'm interested to see how they bring a traditional RPG like Baldur's Gate to the touch-based interface on the iPad. That sounds very very interesting. It's also going to be for Mac OS X as well. So I'm guessing it'll be for Windows 2 at some point. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they negotiate the touch interface with an old-school RPG like Baldur's Gate is.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So that would be my quote-unquote pick for the week.
Quite honestly, the only game I've actually really... I don't think I've played anything in, like, the last week. Maybe Minecraft on the weekend a little bit. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, like, I need to get back to Bastion and Bioshock and Limbo or all these other ones. But
Bioshock 2
my brother got me hooked on Jetpack Joyride for the iPad, which is actually fairly entertaining for a nice little casual, I don't have much time.
Yeah.
Hmm. There's one other being keeping my ear to the ground for indie news. There's one game / game creator wanted to mention. There's a game that just came out called Lone Survivor. It's by a guy named Jasper Byrne. It's kind of a deep psychological horror game. It's 2D. It's not super important.
Yes.
Yes. But the dude, from what I can tell, Jasper Byrne is like the greatest dude ever. And he published this game. It took him 4 years to make, and a lot of it's based on like his own, challenges he's had, I think, with his own, just how he's interpreted challenges in his own life and stuff mm-hmm. like that, much like a good source of inspiration for anybody to use. But he was like, from what I understand, he like is almost embarrassed by the game in the sense that he, you know, they put it up and he started feeling bad because it cost him a lot of money to make this over 4 years and it took him a lot of time. And he eventually like passed the point where he was making where he made money back on it. Like he had made all the money back, and It still kept doing well, and it hasn't been out that long, released on April 23rd of this year. Mm-hmm. And I guess he, like, immediately started just feeling bad about it. Like, no, I shouldn't be making money on this. I feel bad. And if you make a game and then, like, want it, it still costs $10, but and you, like, want to stop making money on it as soon as you've made back what it cost you, you are a full-blown artist, and you are in it for all the right reasons, and I think that's super awesome, EA.
Not to name any names or anything.
So, yeah, Jasper Byrne, you, yeah, I hope I'm saying the name right, you are friggin' awesome, and I'm going to get the game at some point. It's on my list of games to get, and I'm sure it'll be really cool. It looks bizarre and crazy.
I watched a video, a review. It looks really interesting. It really does.
Yeah. So good on him.
On Steam.
Yeah, it was 8 up until May 1st. And I thought about getting it, but I'm like, no, I can't get it right now. I've got too much other stuff to get and finish, like Deus Ex, the original.
Oh, the original one? Have you played Human Evolution at all?
No.
Most recent?
It's just a bit, the full-blown graphic settings on it are just barely outside the reach of my computer, and I'm like, I don't want to get it, because I wasn't totally committed to spending the money on it anyway, and I wanted to play the original Deus Ex first. So I did buy the original Deus Ex for like $3 or whatever, $2 when it's on sale, and now I'm discovering that I'm having a lot of problems with, like, the controls and not being able to shift the controls off. Like, I want to turn the flashlight on, and that's automatically bound to F12, and I can't really change it.
Mm-hmm.
But F12, like, takes a screenshot when you're playing games in Steam.
Oh,
so, like, every time I turn on the flashlight, I take a screenshot. And it's, like, some of the binds, like, as soon as you try and bind it to a different letter, a control to a different letter on your keyboard, it'll allow two different inputs. But if a different thing's using it, it'll take it away from that one. So let's say, like, jump is V instead of spacebar. Well, I wanted to set it to spacebar. So you click on it and press space. Well, now it's set to both V and space. And space was what you were using to aim. So now you don't have any controls for setting how to aim. And it's just like the game didn't age super well as far as controls go. And it's getting really convoluted to get through. But, like, everything, the design of the game and, like, the voice acting and everything seems to be there and really solid. I just can't get the interface quite right. And if I'm going to have to suffer through the game, I'll give it another shot. But if I have to suffer through the game like I had to suffer through the training scenarios, I don't know if I'm going to give it the time. So it's a little bit of a gripe. But I hope to play Human Revolution at some point, because it seemed really cool.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It does sound cool. I probably will never get to it, but it does sound cool.
Oh, I also beat Cthulhu Saves the World not too long ago.
All right.
Which was awesome. An RPG.
Cthulhu Saves the World.
Yeah, it's like an old school, like, Ultima-style RPG, but it is, the writing is really good, and it's really funny. And yes, it is about Cthulhu trying to save the world, which is hilarious in concept. Cthulhu walking around, fighting monsters, of which he is one. Sort of. Ugh. Good stuff.
Sounds good. All right. Anything else?
I'm out.
I'm done too. Well, I think that's episode 14. So until next time, bye.